This year is dedicated in memory of Yosef Hirsch, Zichrono Livrocha, Yosef Tuvia, Ben Yisrael Aryeh, Yibodeh L'chaim Aruchem. Yosef Hirsch was a student in Yeshivat HaMiftar, and he was different than other students. In the fact that usually, first you study and then you figure out what you're going to do with your life. But Yosef had already figured out what he's going to do with his life. He had spent a year in Romania working with Jews, bringing learning in different forms to that. And before that, he had organized the learning community in Rutgers, New Jersey. And through all of that, he realized that he had to go to yeshiva also, so he came. But he knew what he was going to do. He was going to make the world a little bit of a better place for the Jewish people. And his death was a great loss for all of us. Yosef Hirsch, Yosef Tuvia Zichrono Livrocha, Ben Yisrael Aryeh, Yibodeh L'chaim Arukim. Okay, I want to talk about Lag Ba'Omer. Next week, the Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, Parshat HaShavua, catch up to each other. Because this week is Bahar in Eretz Yisrael, and next week is B'chukotai. And in Chutz La'aretz, this week is Emor, and next week is Bahar B'chukotai. So since everything is so mixed up, it's such a mishmash, it's okay if we talk about Lag Ba'Omer. Lag Ba'Omer is interesting. If you look at the sheet, Lag Ba'Omer, you see, is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. The first topic on the sheet. It says, Noagim shelo lisa isha ben Pesach la'atzeret ad Lag Ba'Omer. The time from Pesach, the time you start counting Sfirat HaOmer until Lag Ba'Omer, is a time when you don't marry. Mivnei shebaoto zman metu talmidei Rabbi Akiva. So the first character that appears from connected to Lag Ba'Omer is, of course, Rabbi Akiva. Because during the time from Pesach until Lag Ba'Omer, the talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, the students of Rabbi Akiva, they all died. The Shulchan Aruch then says, "Aval areisu l'kadesh shapir damei v'nisuin namei." He says, "Mi shekafatz v'kanas ein onshin otom." Like if you get married anyway, you don't want to pay attention to this limit, or you didn't pay attention. So the wedding is a wedding, and the marriage is a marriage. And this, of course, today is further confused by the fact that there are different minhagim of when the Avelut starts and when it ends. But let's keep to the system of the Shulchan Aruch. It starts the day you start saying counting Sfirat HaOmer, and it goes on till Lag Ba'Omer. Hagahah. Mihu mi Lag Ba'Omer ve'elach hakol sharet. The Ramah says that after Lag Ba'Omer, Hakol Sharei, meaning you can get married on any day between Lag Ba'Omer and Shavuot. Right? Because there was some difference of opinion, it's not reflected in the Shulchan Aruch, about when the days of Avelut are. When do you have to be in Avel? So the first person that's connected to this Lag Ba'Omer story is Rabbi Akiva. Now, we don't understand exactly why it is that if the students of Rabbi Akiva cease to die, maybe they cease to die because they were all dead. And if they were all dead, is that a reason to get married? Is that a reason to have a party? Is that a reason to end Avelut? Like what started the Avelut was the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. What ended it? They stopped dying. It didn't say that they won the war. There was no victory. It's just like the Romans got tired of killing them. They all petered out. And you know that at the time of Rabbi Akiva, there was this great tragedy that took place in Beitar. And Bar Kokhba, who was considered by some, including Rabbi Akiva, to be a messianic personality, meaning, I don't know exactly what that means, but that you should trust him, and they should go with him, and you should fight with them, and because he was encouraging them, he, Rabbi Akiva, encouraged people to go with Bar Kokhba, because of that, they were all killed. Maybe if they'd all given up, just kind of retreated and disappeared and not established a state, which is what Bar Kokhba actually did. He established some kind of a government and some kind of a state so that the Romans were forced to destroy the Bar Kokhba movement. Now, why do I tell you all of this? Because if you look in the Gemara here is the third line. The third line says, Masechet Yevamot Daf Samach Bet Amud Bet. You see? Amru, Shneim Asar Elef Zugim Talmidim Hayulo L'Rabbi Akiva. He had 12,000 pairs of students, which I guess means 24,000. Now 24,000, that's a big yeshiva. Even today, that would be considered to be a really big yeshiva. He says, Migvat ad Antipras, right from the south to the north in Israel. V'chulam meitu b'perek echad, and they all died at the same time. From the second day of Pesach until Lag Ba'omer. They all died at that time. Why? This is the Gemara. We're reading the Gemara now, right? Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod zelazeh. Lo nahagu kavod zelazeh. I mean, what possible lo nahagu kavod could there have been amongst the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, which was so terrible that it caused them to be killed? But if you put all these things together, the idea of Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba and the revolt in Beitar, it could be that there was this political issue. Could be, I'm giving you a, it's not even a theory, I'm just saying something. You know, it could be that there was this question, do we go with Bar Kokhba, or don't we go with Bar Kokhba? And we know that the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Akiva said Bar Kokhba is the Mashiach. Right, his real name was Bar Kokhba, but they called him Bar Kokhba, Dorach Kochav Miyakov. He was the Messiah for some. But Yochanan ben Turta said, Rabbi Akiva, you're making a terrible mistake, and he's not the Mashiach. And so if we extrapolated that and we say, look, it wasn't just Rabbi Akiva against Yochanan ben Turta, was just one against one. That's not the way it was. But there were many on each side. And what happened with the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? Let's assume, surmise, that they also were not entirely in agreement about whether to follow Bar Kokhba or to desist and maybe save whatever they could save. So on that point, a political point, for those of you who haven't watched the Knesset in action, you know that on Torah, when it comes to a dispute in Torah, you can keep smiling and you can be happy. When it comes to a dispute in politics, impossible. And so, shelo nahagu kavod zeba, ze could be, it was about Bar Kokhba. It was about that question. Do we go with Bar Kokhba, or do we run away from Bar Kokhba? So on that question, lo nagu kavod zeba ze, because on any other Torah question, Rabbi Akiva would certainly have been the decider. But on this question, on the question of prophecy, Is Bar Kokhba the Mashiach or not? Everybody has an opinion. And there's no reason for me to accept the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. No, nothing necessary about it. It doesn't indicate his special quality and talent. So that's what the Gemara says. Shelo nagu kavod ze lazeh v'ya olam shamein. Ad shebar Rabbi Akiva itzer rabotenu shebadarom. Olam shamein means there was no Torah. I mean, the words mean that it was desolate. What was desolate? The world of Torah was desolate because the 24,000 students had been destroyed. V'ya olam shamein. So the Gemara says Rabbi Akiva was still able to go south. All of the students had been north of Yerushalayim. He went south. And he taught the Torah to new students. What were their names? What were the new students' names? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Loza ben Shabu. Everybody's ever learned Mishnah knows all of these names. They learned Gemara, of course. But if you learned the Mishnah, you also come across all of these names. Haim, Hamidu Torah Otasha. So from the Gemara, we learn about the nature of the tragedy of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And the tragedy was not just that many people died, that the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died at that time. But the tragedy was that these 24,000 students were the ones who carried the Torah with them, who were supposed to bring the Torah to the next generation. And they disappeared. A generation disappeared. And somehow, magically, fortunately, happily, Rabbi Akiva was able to re-establish, the Torah, the learning of Torah. And these five Talmidim were the Talmidim that he created, that he raised up. I mean, it may be that they all had studied Torah before Rabbi Akiva came to them. But Rabbi Akiva gave them his special kind of handle on Torah Shebaal Peh, on what has to be learned. So even though during the time of Rabbi Akiva, the Torah was in great jeopardy, and the way I told the story, it may be that Rabbi Akiva was even responsible for that, because why was it that the students were kind of why did they deserve to be destroyed? Because they took sides in a political issue. The political issue was Bar Kokhba. Political issue was Bar Kokhba. Now we go back to our old question. Our first question. What happened on Lag BaOmer? Why is Lag BaOmer a happy day? So if you look at the Pri Chadash, you go up a level to the left, there's the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash is a commentary. De Silva was his name. Is a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. It's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. This is what he says. V'neima. He says that on Lag BaOmer, you see, I don't know if we read this, you see in the Se'if Bet, see Se'if Bet, Da'ogin Shulol Distaper Ad Lag BaOmer, this is another minhag, on the Yemei Sfira, that we don't cut our hair until Lag BaOmer, right? Umar bimbo, I'm sorry, Lag BaOmer, shomim ashaz pasku milamut. That's when they stop dying. I'm reading Se'if Bet in the Shulchan Aruch, right? Further up. Ve'ed listaper ad yom day lamed dalet baboker, elim ken chal yom lamed gimel erev Shabbat. So there is this discussion of when you could take a haircut. Right? Can you take a haircut on Lag BaOmer? Or do you have to wait till Lad BaOmer? Okay, you know, Jews like to talk about things like that. Since Elim Kei Chal Yom Lag BaOmer Shabbat, just Mr. Prim Boom, make folks Shabbat. But if Lag BaOmer turns out to be on Friday, so then you could take a haircut on Friday because you don't want to look terrible on Shabbos, even though in our time, you know, during that those periods of time when a lot of people don't, a lot of men don't shave, like Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed, you know, it used to be that if you looked like that, your mother wouldn't let you out of the house. And today, it became a red badge of courage. You know, like, you don't look that way. You know, like, it's the better way to look. I mean, so, like, things change. You know, things, like, in the world, they just switch around. Like, today, if you go to shul during Chol HaMoed and you shave, so you're the object of scorn. People say, oh, you're not Jewish? You know, like it's like totally switched around. Whereas the halacha, everybody knows, is that you have to cut your hair before Yantiv, so you won't look that way on Yantiv. But if you look that way on Yantiv, it's great. It's even better. You know, like, so here it says, no, I give you all this stuff I'd like, but Oveshomim Az Pasku Milamut. So we see that there is this problem. You see, towards the end of the second line, he's talking about Poland, right? His Medinot, the Ramah. We, Ashkenazim, I mean, that's sort of like the Ramah represents the Ashkenazim. He says, we shave on Lag Ba'omer. Umar bin bo k'tzat simcha. That's the issue. And the Ramah says, Mar bin bo k'tzat simcha. He doesn't say what that is. Well, what's simcha? I mean, historically we know that there is something like that. Now listen to the Pri Chadash. Back to the Pri Chadash. Lag Ba'omer became a day of simcha. Like, you know, there aren't that many days of simcha. I mean, usually simcha is connected to a mitzvah, something you do. Lag Ba'Omer, you don't do anything, at least. According to the Ramah, he doesn't tell you to do anything. He says you don't say tachnun. But you know, today, a lot of days, you don't say tachnun. It's not such a big deal. So, listen to this. Teima d'achshav na'agu b'zeh la'arbot b'simcha, v'shelo l'mar tachnun. This is the quote. Rav Bikein. Einon mistaprim ela ad lamedalet. He's a Sfaradi, the silver, right? So he says, oh, there are more. He said you could take a haircut on the 33rd day. But we only take haircuts on the 34th day. So good. Something to talk about. He says, ulefikach mishin hagas ol mistaper belag ein mochim biyado. So even in my town, if somebody has the forbearance to take a haircut on Lag Ba'Omer, oh, we don't have to say anything bad about him. Mihu, yesh l'dakdek b'simcha zo l'mach. He says, still, I don't understand why I don't understand why the Ramah said that you should be happy. He says, what are we happy about? If you say we're happy because they stopped dying, he says maybe that the reason they stopped dying is because they're all dead. There wasn't anybody else left to kill. So for that you could have a party. You could have like a simcha v'sasson. You're going to get together and eat bagels. No, what's the reason? Bekulam meitu, he says. Whoever heard of such a thing? That I'm celebrating joyfully a massacre. Can you imagine that? Imagine that. So this is the Pri Chadash. This is what he says. Umati vasha simchazo. V'efshar, he says, shasimcha yalotam talmidim shosifa chakach rabbi akiva shelome tukai. You understand? So the Pri Chadash says maybe we're happy that the death of the 24,000 Talmidim was not the end of the story. But in fact, Rabbi Akiva was able to go and find five Talmidim that were very special. And these five Talmidim reestablished Torah. In other words, we're not happy that the Talmidim died. But we're happy that that was not the end of Torah Sheba'al Peh. And Rabbi Akiva was able to reestablish what was going on. And that's called, and that's why we celebrate Lag Ba'Omer. So this is the information that we have about Lag BaOmer in the Gemara, in the Perush, in the Shulchan Aruch, and in the Perush on the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, you see that I brought the Meiri, who explains the Gemara more or less the same way that we did. So the first name that is associated with Lag BaOmer is the name Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a Tana. He lived approximately 135 CE. He was considered to be, you can see, he's considered to be the Gemara, sort of the progenitor of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Because when all the Talmidim died, the story is that Rabbi Akiva himself reconstituted Torah Sheba'al Peh. Now whether that's true 100% or 90% or 85%, there is no doubt that I think that a story like that would not be told about someone who didn't have outstanding capacity. So at the same time we learn about Rabbi Akiva, we learn two things. That he believed that Bar Kokhba was the Mashiach, and that because of that belief, literally hundreds of thousands of Jews were killed. The final destruction was in Beitar, which is the reason that we have an extra bracha. We made an extra bracha in Birkat HaMazon. And the story, so of Rabbi Akiva, if we could delve into it, if we could understand it better, would certainly be very interesting. To think that the same person almost destroyed everything and then was able to rebuild everything to make it anew is quite like a remarkable thought. Now the second person whose name is associated with Lag BaOmer is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Now Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was one of the five students. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, in other words, one of the people who rejuvenated, Torah Sheba'al Peh, who made it all happen, was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was a very remarkable person. But what's important for us to know right now is that the yard site of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is Lag BaOmer. Yortzeh Rav Shimon ben Yochai was on Lag BaOmer. And there is a tradition that on Lag BaOmer, the simcha that we're missing, right, remember the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Pri Chodosh, they all mention that you should have simcha on Lag BaOmer. But don't tell us how to do the simcha. What are we supposed to do? Sit home and drink? Or eat holy bagels? I mean, what are we supposed to do? So the simcha part of Lag BaOmer was taken over by the simcha reflecting on Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, how did that happen? I don't know. I mean, it's what a historian should look into, somebody who has patience that I don't have. But I know that the Abu family that settled in the middle of the 19th century in Tzfat, the head of the family was a Rav in Tzfat, and also amazingly the representative of the French government in northern Israel. Like the Galilee was considered by the French to be a separate and connected to Lebanon. Right? Remember Lebanon? It used to be a country. They had an association with the French, and they speak French in Lebanon. I mean, not the guys in the movies, but the guys in the hotels, right, who are like gambling at night. They all speak French. Because France had an interest, whatever that means, in northern Israel and Lebanon. And the French representative French rabbi to northern Israel. Like, they couldn't get an Arab to do that. They got this rabbi, Abu, who was a Rav in Tzfat. And because he came from, I guess, from Morocco, he knew French. So he was their representative. I don't know what it meant. I don't know what he did. I don't know anything. But what I do know is that the grave of Rav Shimon ben Yochai in the middle of the 19th century was not approachable. It was overgrown and undergrown, and there were grasses and trees, and it was, you just couldn't go there. You couldn't go near it. It was just there. It was just there. So he, the head of this family, the Rav, he undertook to clean the place, to get out all the wild growing things. And Abu, A-B-U, I think. But and he fixed up the grave. He fixed up the grave, and every year on the when he was still alive, there he took the Sefer Torah. He bought a Sefer Torah special to be used in the synagogue that he had built in the kever of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and he would walk with that Sefer Torah from Tzfat. Remember, he lived in Tzfat to Meron. Not so far. I mean, you could walk it. Like, even if you're not in great shape, you could also walk it. Not so terrible. So you should take the Sefer Torah and walk with the Sefer Torah from Tzfat to Meron, and then he put the Sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh, in the shul that he had built. And this became a kind of a holiday. This became a holiday. People from Tzfat would walk with him, and they would go, and they would, and they took up this other minhag. There was another minhag of lighting a fire. Now, I guess in 1850, you know, if you had a choice between lighting a fire and doing nothing, so lighting a fire won. I know, because you could do that. What else were they going to do? They couldn't get fireworks off a boat in the Haifa Bay. You know, that was not one of the options. So they lit fires. They lit fires. So the holiday of the Yahrzeit of Rav Shimon ben Yochai was celebrated in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laretz. Not in Chutz Laretz. Chutz Laretz is a different term, as we will see in a minute. Because it's celebrated in Eretz Yisrael, this procession of bringing the Torah to the kever of Shimon Yochai, and lighting fires, which, you know, was what they did. Now, one other thing that they did, which I can't tell you exactly why, because I can only guess at it, but I mean, they burned clothes. You know, they had clothes, and they burnt them in the fires that they built in Meron. Why did they burn the fires? I already told you, I don't know. Why they burned the clothes? Basically, maybe it was to show, like, reckless abandon. You know, like, you don't need property. Good things are going to happen. Something great is going to happen. So what do I have to keep my stuff for? Okay, maybe that's a too modern type of an interpretation. But they burned clothes. Because they burned clothes, people started asking shilas. They wrote to Rabbanim. They said, what are you burning clothes for? Why do you give the clothes to the poor? You want to give your clothes away? Give it to poor people. What are you burning up your clothes for and losing the whole thing? So they wrote to the Ksav Sofer. Ksav Sofer, as you know, was a great halachic authority. Couldn't just ignore the Ksav Sofer. Ksav Sofer says, what? They're burning clothes? This is madness. This is prohibited by the Torah. This is certainly Baal Tashlis. And what are they doing anyway, he says. What is this, making holidays that I never heard of? Naturally, you know, when there's an argument between the rabbi and the balabatim, you know who always wins? Always, the balabatim. And if the rabbi insists, they fire him. That's how it works. And that's how it worked. And this holiday of burning I don't know, burning clothes, I don't think they do that anymore. I don't know what happens. But this holiday of making bonfires in honor of the Yahrzeit of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, this holiday spread from Meiron, Bedva Meiron, existed every place. Every place they were Haredi Jews. Now today also Dati Lumi Jews. The difference is the Haredim use wooden matches, and the Dati Lumi, they have lighters. Right? Because it's like, you know, more modern. But, so it spread. When I came to Eretz Yisrael, when I moved into my Haredi neighborhood that I live in now, so I was very, very vehement, you know, like young people can be vehement. So I was vehement. I said, how can you let these fires go on? There were actually children that we knew of, that we heard of over the years, who had been killed. It was a neighbor of ours, a child, who had been killed because he decided to climb up on the fire when the fire was burning. Or he climbed up and somebody lit it. I don't know what happened, but the child died. So I said to the, I went to a Rav who was well known, and I saw him on Lag BaOmer standing there, not taking care of the children, lighting the fire himself, because he had having such a wonderful time. So I'm saying, I went to him and I said, what are you doing? The kids, you know, are in danger. He said, don't worry. Everybody, people say that. They say, don't worry, you're in God's hands. I said, what do I mean, God's hands? You know, if God will help me out in the stock market, oh, that's in God's hands. What do you mean, God's hands are standing next to the fire, I'm not going to burn up? I said, what about the little kids? But you see that whatever voices were raised against the fires on Lag BaOmer have not prevailed. And we're still making fires, and Meiron is still Meiron. The only thing is, the good thing that happened was that since so many people go to Meiron, it was very difficult not to organize it to some extent. So the reason I was telling you this is that Rabbi Abu, who apparently was good in business also, sold the right to light the first bonfire. Can you imagine that? I mean, how do you think of that? You know, how do you come up with it? He said, look, it's my place, the kever of Rav Shimon Yochai. I cleaned it up. I built it. I made it mine. And then there was somebody who lived in Svat, whose name was Yaakov Friedman, who was a Rishoner. Chassid, he was a Rebbe, a Rishoner. So he said to Abu, I want to buy the chazoke on lighting the first bonfire in Meiron. And he sold it to him. And whether you believe it or not, that chazoke to this day is owned by and executed by the Rishoner Rebbe. Every year, the Rishoner Rebbe is the first bonfire lit. Some years ago, the Rabbanut HaRashit, you know about the Rabbanut HaRashit? They wanted to get in on it. Because it was photo ops, I don't know, it looked good, it was on television, you know, everything, it's a new world. Like, you know, it's everybody's there, even if you're not there. So they negotiated, Rabbi Amar will be there this year and light his Midurah, but not before 1 o'clock in the morning. That was the negotiated settlement. So, I mean, maybe it'll look good on television, but at 1 o'clock in the morning, there'll be a lot of other bonfires burning away. The second moment here is Rabbi Shimon Yochai. There's one other thing about Lag BaOmer that I want to tell you that you may not know. In Europe, and for a little while in America as well, it was called a day of Keshet V'Chetz. Keshet V'Chetz, a bow and an arrow. And they had field days. I remember we used to have field days. What? Songs? No.
No, I
remember the Keshev Chetz. The Keshev Chetz was, you had races, and you had three-legged races, and potato bag races. You had just all kinds of competitive things, which I assume had something to do with the youth, with the Tunot Noir, the, what do you call that?
Youth movements.
Oh, movements, right. The youth movements really got into that, the religious ones and the non-religious ones. And this was kind of a reflection of the fact that Bar Kokhba became to represent Gvura. Right, you know, we were like weak on Gvura. We, the Jews, in their history, were a little weak on heroism. So we took even Bar Kokhba, who caused the tremendous tragedy, and we said, but he was big and strong and tall, and, you know, he had this thing with the thumbs. What? Yeah, yeah. So we went for that. So that's a third motif. But getting back to my original... I guess, could be.
That they were out hunting.
I was not only not there, I didn't see the movie. I don't know. Well, you mean, who are we talking about? I understand, but how many Jews were there who lived up in the north? There was a community in Tzfat. And there was a community in Tveria. And they all came in the 18th century. So you're talking about 100 years. You're talking about a very poor community who didn't have the wherewithal to fix things and make things. And, you know, until in the state of Israel, they realized that these are tourist attractions and it's worth making an investment. But private people had no way to do that. Until he came along, he had a little bit of money, so he invested it. He got some laborers to come and help him fix the place up. But it was a very remarkable thing. There were a lot of graves in the north that were never dealt with. No one ever did anything with them.
So that.
What? Well, it takes a lot more effort. Okay. Okay, I guess crossing the street. No, I'm saying we live in a very dangerous world. Like crossing the street is like a big problem. Okay, I'm. It was not celebrated in Meron as a separate kind of holiday. The people had weddings on Lag BaOmer. It was like they didn't have weddings till Lag BaOmer. They had weddings, but they didn't do this thing in Meron until it became possible to get there. So I want to tell you something about Rav Shimon ben Yochai. I don't want it to be too digressive. As you know, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is credited with writing the Zohar, and he lived a very remarkable life. A lot of it in a cave. He and his son Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who is responsible for the Torah Sheba'al Peh of Nistar. As the Ramban says in his introduction to the Torah, the Ramban says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he also gave him the Torah Sheba'al Peh, which means the explanation of the psukim. Like when you read something, I mean, you can't just know what the words mean. You have to have some idea of what the intention is. I mean, that's called, it's not always called interpretation, but that's what it is. Anything you read, which was written more than a week ago, has to be understood. Because the meanings of the words themselves change. So even if you read a newspaper, which is kind of a very common kind of use of words, they want a lot of people to understand what they say. They're not just hiding anything. Nevertheless, if you ask somebody who is studied English in another country, not in a non-English speaking country, who knows English very well, he's not always able to get the gist of what the newspaper is saying. So the Ramban says that when God gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was explained to Moshe Rabbeinu, because there are things he don't understand. For example, if the Torah says that there's a mitzvah called tefillin, you have to put on tefillin, and if the tefillin in the Torah are called totafot, so it's inconceivable that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say, what is that? Right, to God. When God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, totafot beni necha. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, oh great. But he must have also said, what is that? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu must have told him what that is, and that's called Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Ramban says that the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebamichtav, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Torah Shebaal, that's the Torah Shebaal Peh of Nigla, we call that. Nigla, the obvious Torah, the Torah that we read. But the Torah Shebaal Peh of Nistar, the hidden Torah, the Kabbalistic Torah, the Torah of Splendors, that was also given to Moshe Rabbeinu, but not taught to everybody. It was taught in a hidden manner. So when it came to the students of Rabbi Akiva, we can assume that what was wiped out was the Torah Shebe'al Peh of the Torah that we know about, but also the Torah Shebaal Peh of the Nistar, the hidden Torah, which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So that in fact, the reestablishing of the Torah after the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died was given to two people. One is Rabbi Akiva, and the other is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Akiva is the one who we know about, who gave us the Mishnah and the Gemara, and he was the kind of progenitor of all of that. And Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is the one who reestablished the Torah Shebaal Peh of Nistar, of what we call today Kabbalah or Zohar or any of those kinds of words. So that the connection between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is that each is credited with producing for the future generations what we call today Torah. Each of them. And therefore, in some conceptual way, it makes sense that we celebrate both of these people on the same day. In other words, it's true that we celebrate, according to the Pri Chadash, we celebrate Rabbi Akiva because even though his Talmidim died, he was able to find new Talmidim to carry on in the work of the Mishnah and the Talmud, etc. And we celebrate Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai because Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was able to help us carry on with the Torah Shebaal Peh of Nistar, of the hidden Torah, which we still learn in the guise of the Zohar, for example, one of the primary books of the Kabbalah. And to finish this idea, I just want to mention a little bit of what the B'nai Yisotcher says. We look on the second page. The second line, the end of the second line, he says, התגלות הטוב של התורה שגנז בה האור כי טוב, והוא האור שהאדם מביט בו מסוף העולם עד סופו, וזה האור רואים מסתורים של יוצא בראשית תנא. הנה רבי שמעון ויוחאי, כראוהו בוצינו קדישה. בוצינו קדישה means a holy flame. כי על ידו נתגל יסודות התורה. Who sowed ha'or, ki tov ha'ganuz ba'torah, al-kei nikra sifro ha'kadosh zohar, or ha'mavik, b'sof ha'olam, v'ad softo. So I say to you, there are two kinds of or in the world, there are two kinds of light. There's the light that you use, and the light that attracts. The light that you use, that's Torah Or, that's referring to the neglect. The light that you see, that you understand. You know, if I learn more, I'll know more. If I study harder, I'll know more of what it is that I am learning and studying. That's Or. Or is something that I use. I use the light in order to produce a certain result. Eish, however, Eish is not functional. Eish doesn't enable me to learn. Because it wavers all the time. You know, these big bonfires. If you wouldn't take a book to read near a bonfire, it's just not convenient. But the Eish itself, the fire itself, draws you close. It's something that's interesting. Do you ever see children looking at a fire? You know, you can't keep them away. You can't stop them from moving, inching their way closer and closer, because the fire itself has this attractive side to it. So the light is the light of Torah, of Nigla, of the obvious Torah. And the fire is the fire of Nista. So when we came to celebrate the achievement of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, it's not just his yahrzeit, but it's his achievement. We light the bonfires because that represents the light that he, Rabbi Shimon Yochai, brought into the world. But when we learn Torah, we look for a light. We don't look for a fire. And sometimes the Torah itself makes that fire. Have a good Shabbat. Next week we return to Parshat.